right ahead.
Good evening and welcome to this Monday, July 20th, 2026 Town Council meeting of the Town of Curry Beach. I'd like to call on Art Pascal for the invocation and then we'll stand for the pledge.
Into this saying until I took on the challenge of teaching my granddaughter how to drive. You see, for some people, a ditch is just a means of collecting and distributing water. But to me and my granddaughter, while she was behind the wheel of my car, staying between those two ditches meant safety and success. We knew that as long as she stayed on the road within our lane, between those two ditches, there was only so much damage she could do as a result. To take this one step further, and possibly a little bit deeper, I can envision the road as a metaphor for our journey through life, with the ditches representing everything that affects what we'll encounter along the way. Our thoughts, our feelings, our attitude, our career, our choices, our finances, our habits, our beliefs, our health, even the people we choose to be with. It is within the extremes of those two ditches that we must find our safety and security. But if our approach to life puts too much emphasis on one area at the expense of another, if we start to find ourselves veering too close to the ditches, our priorities become skewed, and we lose the balance we need to better serve our neighborhoods, our churches, our community, and our family. Finding that balance is sometimes easy, oftentimes difficult, but never without meaning or value. We must utilize our God-given wisdom, courage, and discernment to help us appreciate where we are in our journey, the experiences we've had, both good and bad, and the clarity necessary to know the difference between the two. Let's bow our heads. Heavenly Father, we give thanks for the smooth and rocky road you provided us to travel. May we find our joy and purpose between the ditches you created to assist and guide us along the way. You have placed us right here, right now, for a reason. And though our human nature tends to take us closer and closer towards the ditches, help us to navigate our way back to the safety, security, and comfort of your presence. Thank you for the many blessings you've given us, as well as for the people you've placed in our lives to share them with. May you bless our elected officials and town employees who ensure that we enjoy more roads and less ditches. And as always, God bless Curry Beach. Amen.
Please stand for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you again, Art, for your invocation. First item on the agenda is the approval of the consent agenda items.
Make a motion to approve as presented.
Second.
Have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Next is the adoption of the agenda. And before we adopt the agenda, we need to amend the agenda, Commissioner.
Yes, sir.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Make a motion to amend item 13.1 to closed session per North Carolina General Statute 143.318.11A6 for a personnel matter, to add that.
I second the motion.
We have a second. Any other changes to the agenda? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Public comment period. No one has signed up, so we will not have public comment tonight. Thank you. Presentations, Mayor Pro Tem.
Okay, good. Chief Kennedy and Mayor, if you please join me down front. So, as the president of the Board of Directors of the Curry Beach Volunteer Fire Department, it's sometimes a pleasure to get to recommend people for awards. And so With that, I'm going to turn it over to Chief Kennedy, but we have two members that we would like to recognize tonight. And thanks, everyone, for coming.
Sure. You will call them forward?
Oh, sure. So we use their original names from the fire department, Yankee 1 and Yankee 2. Jim Dugan and Tom Russell can please come up. And just so you know how long that they've been knowing me, I was originally introduced to them as my youngin' from my dad. So, and obviously that was a long time ago, but I'm not still a youngin' anymore. So I'll give it over to the chief.
Gentlemen?
Chief?
So good evening. Tonight we have the special privilege of recognizing a few individuals that have achieved a phenomenal milestone with not just the Curry Beach Fire Department, but the town of Curry Beach. These individuals have reached 30 years of service with the town. They've certainly strengthened both the department and the town. 30 years represents far more than just time. It represents thousands of hours of training, emergency responses, community service, and personal sacrifice. It reflects 3 decades of answering the call, putting others before yourself, and serving with professionalism, integrity, and commitment. The fire service is built on people who are willing to serve without expecting recognition, and each of you has embodied that spirit throughout your careers. Your dedication has made our department stronger, your leadership has influenced those who have served beside you, and your service has made Curry Beach a much safer place to live and visit. So on behalf of the town of Curry Beach and the Curry Beach Fire Department, thank you for your unwavering commitment and for the legacy each of you has built over the last 30 years. It's our honor to recognize and celebrate your remarkable service. And since David Hagler is up here as well, in 2 days, on July 22nd, he will also reach 30 years. So I'd like to recognize him as well with the 30 years of service pin.
You have one more thing over there. Sorry, I didn't bring them.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Charlie Miller.
Yes, sir.
And did you stick them over here? Two flags.
There you go. These are from Representative Charlie Miller. Oh, and they were both flown over the legislative office.
Correct.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
Perfect.
Thank you very much.
Representative Miller could not be here tonight, but he wanted me to present this certificate of appreciation to Thomas Russell. And so I'll just read it instead of trying to go as I go. Whereas Thomas Russell has devoted more than 5 decades to public services in the military, law enforcement, fire and rescue, and veteran advocacy. And whereas Mr. Russell served his country faithfully with the 1st Air Cavalry Division deploying to the Republic of Vietnam for a tour of duty in 1968. And whereas Mr. Russell joined the New York Port Authority on following his military service, faithfully serving the city of New York for 21 years. And whereas Mr. Russell was recognized for his actions in major emergencies such as TWA Flight 843, rescue efforts following the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, and recovery efforts at Ground Zero following 9/11. And whereas Mr. Russell moved to Curry Beach in 1996, joining the Curry Beach Volunteer Fire Department, quickly rising to the rank of lieutenant, playing a significant role in training and emergency rescue efforts within the city and county, culminating in 30 years of service to Curry Beach. And whereas Mr. Russell has continued to serve his community, in addition to being an advocate for American veterans, participating in numerous events and projects to improve the livelihood of his fellow veterans. And whereas Mr. Russell has had a 50-plus year distinguished career bettering his communities and serving his country. Now, therefore, this 16th day of July, in the year 2026, Representative Charlie Miller recognizes Mr. Thomas Russell's distinguished service. I'm Charlie Miller.
I'm going to get pictures after I'll talk about it.
Okay.
All right. Our next award is my friend Jim Dugan here. And just in case y'all don't know Jim, I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. I think this is 4 pages, I think. Him and his wife, Jane, moved to Curry Beach in 1996 following a 30-year career as a firefighter in Toledo, Ohio, retiring at the rank of captain. He immediately joined the KD Volunteer Fire Department and served as training officer for the department and ocean rescue. Jim came to us as a trained paramedic and rescue diver. He has trained over 400 lifeguards and 60 volunteer firefighters in CPR AED usage. Jim was elected to Cure Beach Town Council in 1999 and served for 12 consecutive years until 2011. During his time in council, he served as liaison to Public Works. He is the fourth longest serving town councilman in our history. Jim was instrumental in the transition of the move from an all-volunteer department to a combination paid volunteer department. This significantly upgraded the emergency response for our growing town. Jim served as the town's emergency manager in 2007, 2008, hurricane seasons, and I'm assuming, David, he served when you were deployed.
Correct.
During that time. So he filled in while David was deployed and called that a few. In 2016, Jim stepped in to fill an unexpected vacancy on town council for 16 months. Jim was the perfect person to fill this vacancy. I was one of the ones that applied. I was so happy they did. Jim also has served on the Planning and Zoning Commission for just over 5.5 years. He still responds to fire calls and serves on the board of directors for the fire department and the Firefighter Relief Fund. In his spare time, he has volunteered at the North Carolina Aquarium at Fort Fisher as a diver for public education and a tank maintenance support. He supported diving operation for the NC North Carolina Underwater Archaeological Museum in 2014-2016 on Blackbeard's Queen Anne's Revenge, contributing to historical recovery. Jim has been a volunteer at the Federal Point Historical Preservation Society. I personally feel, and I know David feels the way and Ed, that Jim has been a mentor to us and countless others here in the community, and I'm proud to call him my friend. So tonight, Jim, on behalf of the Governor Josh Stein, we are reposing special confidence in the integrity, learning, and zeal of James Jim Dugan, the Order of the Longleaf Pine.
Mandy's going to get some pictures of you two guys.
Chief Kennedy, I think.
Chief right here.
Yeah, side one together.
Yep.
Right here, close one.
Nice.
Chief Kennedy has one left.
Yes, sir. Before we conclude here tonight, you know, I think everybody in the community knows the caliber of man standing in front of us all. But at the same time, we also have another individual who's standing here beside us, who is certainly in with this caliber of gentleman.
Dude.
So before we conclude, there is one more recognition to present. David, you've stood here tonight to help recognize two individuals for their years of service. But what you didn't know is that your name was also submitted for the same honor.
Okay.
The Order of the Longleaf Pine is reserved for North Carolinians who have demonstrated extraordinary service and made a lasting impact on their communities. When I thought about who truly embodies those qualities, your name, of course, came to mind. Your humility has always kept you from seeking recognition. Just like tonight, you serve because it's the right thing to do, not because you're looking for credit. But it's that quiet dedication, your character, and your lifelong commitment to Curie Beach that make you so deserving of this award. So on behalf of the town of Curie Beach, in the state of North Carolina, it's my great honor, along with the mayor, to present you with the
very
sneaky.
Picture.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Three of you again.
Ed, can you get in?
Yeah.
Nicely done by the conspiring people. Right there.
Good. Congratulations, sir. Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Speeches, gentlemen?
Thank you.
Thank you.
See, guys, now, see, y'all got some work to do now. So, our next item on the agenda is the water system asset management plan, and Mark Bacon, Engineering Services, Business Development Director and Grant Writer. So it's hard to, that's a hard act to follow. Before you start, thank you everyone for coming tonight. Appreciate that. I know Jim and Tom do. Okay, Mark, go ahead, sir.
I'm here to present the results of the Fury Beach Water System Asset Management Plan, which was funded by an ARPA grant, it seems a long time ago, and then it started. So this was funded by a Division of Water Infrastructure $150,000 grant. It was funded through the American, the COVID funding from long ago. There was no required match for the local town. Project elements basically came in, and I've got Howard Price with Fieldview, who his son and some other individuals who worked for the company conducted all the on-the-ground work, all the field work, in inventorying all the town's water system assets. These include all the water mains, hydrants, valves, the wells and elevated tanks. They came in and working together and with the our firm's engineers, assessed the condition of each individual asset, developed an operation and maintenance plan, and identified and prioritized capital improvement projects for the water system. Deliverables are multiple asset inventories and databases. For all of the assets mentioned, the asset management plan, which includes a 10-year capital improvement plan for all of the recommended improvements identified during the asset inventory assessment, and then an updated GIS map of the water system and all assets, which Howard Price developed in Diamond Maps, and all of that GIS, all those GIS layers were provided to Atlas for the town's GIS map that they maintain. The asset management overview is basically come in and look at the water system and develop a blueprint of how the town will manage their water system, inventory and provide an inventory and assessment of all the assets and associated databases. Outline O&M procedures, provide priority project recommendations and associated costs, and update GIS mapping of the water assets. And processes described last time for the sewer, come in, take inventory, look at all the individual assets, prioritize their importance to the system, develop the asset management plan, and then implement the plan, which the first step for implementation is adopting the asset management plan and then working towards funding and implementing the project outlined in capital improvement plan, and then revising the AMP on an annual basis. In evaluating the assets, we used multiple angles to do that. Field surveys, visual inspections by Howard and his staff, looking at industry standard useful life guides. The Division of Water Infrastructure has now developed an asset management guide which provides a number of different tables on the useful lives of various assets of water and sewer systems. Material type, like for water lines, whether it's galvanized iron, cast iron, PVC, each one has a useful life range that is used. You know, when was it installed? How long it's been in operation? How much useful life, or is it beyond that useful life to determine its condition? Condition assessment, looking at, say, an electrical plant panel or valves at a well, and base, you know, its appearance, when it was installed, how heavily rusted, things like that, and that visual assessment for condition. How important that asset is to the system. Some assets are much more important, such as your elevated tanks or your water supply wells. Whether those assets have redundancy. You've got two water towers and you've got four wells, so you've got backups. You've got two emergency wells in reserve in case you need those to come online. Institutional knowledge. Jimmy knows the system very well, and it's taking that institutional knowledge that is in his head and in your archives of water plans and as-built drawings and getting it into one place. We have seen in many small towns where, you know, 20, 30-year employees in public works, they've got all that institutional knowledge in their head, and then they retire, and that knowledge is gone. And then you have to start from scratch. And there's also, in the public works staffing world, there's a shortage of qualified, experienced people, and it's like the construction trades. There are not enough people going into the public works and employment world. So what I use is the EPA back in 2017, was their last version, but they used to provide an asset management software package to small towns for free. And this is what I use for water and sewer inventory assessments and to prioritize capital projects. I take a bunch of information, plug it into a screen, that's the actual screen, and the algorithms come through, they'll rank all of the assets in criticality and importance, and then prioritize them for capital projects. So this is what I use to build the inventories and then to determine capital projects. And this is where it is to be Debbie Dallas. So what I'm about to present is an overview of all the town's water system assets. So we inventoried and determined there were 83 assets in the water system. And some of these are sub-assets for things like wells where you have pumps, electrical controls, valves, piping, things like that. We identified about 11% were high-risk assets, 84% were medium risk, and then 4% were low risk. Some assets, like your wells and elevated tanks, if one of those goes down or you lose an elevated tank, or say the 12-inch line to the settler's elevated tank fails, those will have a major impact. And, you know, it can result in violations as well as public health threats. But any asset in the system, either individually or collectively, that failed can also result in a similar situation for those high-risk assets. The town has done a pretty good job of regularly adjusting its rates on an annual basis, which is the proper approach. We have found in some communities where they have depended heavily on grants to fund their water and sewer infrastructure improvements or maintenance, those grants kept their rates artificially low, and those low rates affected their water and sewer fund revenues to where their expenditures would exceed their revenues operating in deficit, and also created a dependency on grants to where they use that to subsidize operation and maintenance by basically doing deferred maintenance, letting their infrastructure just run and run until it failed. So the Local Government Commission and the State Water Infrastructure Authority, they look at your operating ratio, which is revenue versus expenditure, and a baseline of having a properly operated water and sewer system is 1.0, which is basically breaking even. For accounting for maintenance, operation, asset replacement, and depreciation, the UNC's Environmental Finance Center typically likes to see an operating ratio between 1.2 and 1.5. So one of the good things about doing the asset management plan for council is now you've got documentation to back up why you have to raise rates. And especially when you look at the final bullet, which is the estimated water capital improvements over the next 10 years, totaling $21.8 million. Your supply assets are all in pretty fair condition. The town, over the last couple of years, have made investments, strategic investments, in replacing assets that are need to be replaced on a regular basis, such as your telemetry. You've replaced all the your well motors.
Mandy, can you move forward one slide for the audience?
Yes.
You should be on supply assets.
My apologies.
That's all right.
So you all, on a whole, compared to a number of our smaller clients, do a good job of scheduling and replacing equipment when it needs to be replaced. Many systems will run their wells, their lift stations, until they fail, and then they have to call somebody to come in the middle of the night and fix it, and that becomes very expensive. So all the wells were installed between 1982 and 1987. Average useful life of a well is 50 years. If you recase a well, that can extend the life of the well from about 30 to 50 years. But when you recase a well shaft, it does reduce the diameter of that well. Storage assets, like I said, you've got two elevated tanks, total capacity of 600,000 gallons. Sutler's well was installed in 1993. Assembly was installed in 2006. Ages 33 and 20 respectively. Average useful life of an elevated tank is 70 years, but you all have a maintenance contract, and as long as you maintain it annually and maintain that maintenance contract, you extend the useful life of that tank indefinitely. Distribution assets. You have 22 miles of pipe ranging from 1 to 12 inches in diameter, cast iron, ductile iron, PVC, and galvanized iron are your primary, are your materials for your pipe inventory. 40% of your lines are over 70 years old, and that entails a substantial amount of linear footage. And this is your cast iron and galvanized pipe inventory that was installed as the original system in 1953. And that totals over 46,000 feet. You've got 130 hydrants, 65% are less than 40 years old, 35% is over 40 years old, and I think I explained this in the sewer asset presentation, that 40 years is a benchmark that the Division of Water Infrastructure uses to determine what is considered old infrastructure, which provides additional points on funding applications. Because DWI has two priorities when it comes to funding infrastructure. One is repairing and replacing infrastructure, with an additional emphasis placed on infrastructure such as piping that's over 40 years old. If it's something like a pump station or a well, that's 20 years old. And then the next priority is expansion, which is a much lower priority because the focus of DWI is repairing and replacing old infrastructure. You have 435 valves, 87% of them are 30 years in age, which is the average, which is the standard useful life for a valve. This replacement of valves or addressing valves was not addressed as a specific construction priority, but there is one in there that is kind of a planning and assessment. So this gives you a sense based on useful life and using DWI's guidance of the condition for your various pipe materials, with the poor and very poor being your cast iron, which has a useful life of 80 years, and then your galvanized iron, which has a useful life of 50 years. Some of the common problems that we see, and you all are not unique, and this doesn't mean this is what it looks like underground.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I'm pretty sure these aren't Cherry Beach pictures,
no,
right? Okay, I just want to make sure that was clear.
General, you know, common problems with cast iron and galvanized iron pipe. Galvanized iron is pretty much 1-inch or 2-inch diameter pipe. It was basically used to, you know, early on when putting in water systems, starting with WPA or even before then, you know, just to get people water. Yep. There wasn't any thought for fire protection, which the minimum diameter for fire protection is 6 inches.
Yep.
So 1, 2, 3, 4 inch lines provide little to no fire protection. Howard's got some samples of stuff we pulled out of the ground of 1 inch galvanized, and it's very similar to where, you know, it's tuberculated on the inside, which it reduces flow when you flush the lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that rust corrosion built on the inside is not loose, so you can get cloudy water. And just, again, just samples of what happens when you've got 80 to 100 year old pipe. We have also found that these types of lines are a source of water loss. 10% is the typical, is the accepted average water loss for a system, for unaccounted water loss, which is basically loss of leaks, water that can't be billed and, you know, paid for. So it's like inaccurate metering, like old slow meters, leaks, firefighting, system flushing, people filling their pools, things like that. So again, those are water loss that can't be billed for. And Arlen provided me the town's billing, the amount of water they billed on a monthly basis for 23, 24, and 25. And then I pulled the monthly production from the local water supply plan that the town files annually. So in 23, you had about a 17% loss, 22% loss in 24, and then a 19% loss between the amount of water that you produce and the amount of water you bill. I've seen numbers worse than this.
Mm-hmm.
We are working in one town that we are on verge of replacing their entire system of 1938-1968 infrastructure, and at times they were losing 50% of their water. So this is, yeah.
What's the financial impact of that, roughly?
You know, you can probably look at your audit and look at your revenues, and there's a way to estimate the amount of money that you are losing. That's not something I factored, but it is something that, you know, you can, you know, it's not going to be an exact figure, but you can ballpark an estimate of.
Yeah, so the financial impact is the rates are higher than they would be if we fix it.
Okay.
Because Arlen has to account for the cost, right? So we pay the cost. So if we fix it, which we work on it all the time,
yeah,
but the rates would go down. Because it's an enterprise fund, so it has to pay for itself.
Because you've got the electricity needed to
pump
the water, the chemicals you need mm-hmm. to treat the water, and then labor costs, everything factors into
No,
that.
I agree.
Yeah.
Specific recommendations for the CIP. Your supply wells, most of your wells, your electrical controls are original to its construction. General useful life is 30 years. Check and gate valves are similar. I know some valves have been replaced in some of the wells. Production meters, useful life of 10. I do know that I think one out of the four has been replaced recently. I think all the others are either original or are beyond their useful life. And then disinfection systems have a useful life of about 10 years. So these are just kind of standard scheduled replacements that happen based on useful life. Elevated tanks are fine, just as long as you maintain your maintenance contract. Recommendations for the distribution system would be to start thinking about replacing your 1953 era water system. You've got some blocks that are served by 2-inch water lines that have no fire protection.
Where are you saying there's no fire protection?
There is fire protection, but those areas that have a 2-inch line, you know, there's a 6-inch line at the opposite end, but you know, along that block there, if it's 2-inch, you can't put a hydrant on.
No, I understand, but we have a hydrant grid throughout the entire town.
Yes,
the entire town is protected for fire protection.
You have adequate fire protection.
Okay, I just want to make sure
we're
clear.
I don't want to say you don't.
Okay. Good.
So that old system is bound by N Avenue to the north, Atlantic Avenue, Fort Fisher Boulevard, 3rd Avenue to the west, and 7th, 6th, and 5th Avenue to the west, and E Avenue to the south. Some of the challenges that will be presented in dealing with replacing some of these water lines is in a lot of areas you have your service line running mid-block behind houses where, you know, the house is supplied from the back.
Mm-hmm.
So if you decide to do this and install a 6-inch line, that would be, you know, in those areas where you need to upgrade your small diameter lines to 6-inch. Also, a lot of, is it known, is there an active easement for those service lines passing behind? So you can see some of the challenges faced in where some of these service lines run. So we've got a lot of fence encroachment, trees, things like that. Fort Fisher Boulevard, that main replacement, DOT right away goes from curb to curb. DOT typically doesn't allow for patching, and any replacement of the water line in the street may require from DOT complete overlay. That explains some of the expense on this part. And here are the cost estimates for the next, for the first 5 years. And again, as with the sewer, just want to emphasize the CIP schedule is not mandatory for the town to follow. It is at the town's discretion to decide projects and when to schedule. The total for the first 5 years is $21 million. The valve inventory and assessment study would come in and exercise those valves that are outside of the 1953 era system to determine, rather than replace all of the valves that were based on useful life, as noted as in poor condition, it would come out and exercise each valve and from there determine which valves would be needing to replace and which valves were fine. The AIA grant program, since this would be an inventory and assessment of the valves, could potentially cover that cost in the form of a grant.
So just on this one for council, similar to the sewer program, Jimmy, I'd like to take this offline and come back to council before we pass this, because we have to pass this. But ideally, we would modify this just like we did the sewer plan, bring it back to council, and then pass it with the modification. And we'll work with them over this month for the next month council meeting. And this will be what we're focused on.
You think you can have that back to us in a month?
We will.
Okay.
Yeah. Jimmy and I have already started looking at it, so we will.
Right. So you guys, I'm sure you guys all, you may know the answer, but since I'm new, I just want to know, who would manage this entire project, all of these pieces of this? Is it something that they would recommend or that they do, or do we go out and find our own vendors to do this work? Or do we?
So we would. So we would make it a project in the budget process, and then working with the attorney, we would make a bid sheet and bid it out for the work. They may be the technical support people in writing the scope of work, but then who actually does it? For this much money, we're going to have to bid it out. I'm sure our attorney will tell us that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
And
we got to build it in the budget process first, right? So Jimmy has this year's funding for water work that we have in the budget that we just approved last month, and we will continue that work forward. We may change some stuff after looking at this now that we have it, specifically around the electrical controls. And then I think Jimmy may or may not agree, but we'll recommend to council that we try to get the grant for the valve inventory assessment study. The one concern with that is if they go out there and start moving all these valves around and they break one, then we want to be ready to fix stuff. And so you have to make sure if you're messing around with water valves on an older system that you're prepared to replace them if it goes awry, right? So that's the one thing. We want spares on hand, which we have. For most of our system, we have at least one or two spare valves just in case we run into a break and have the problem. But if you start to do this assessment, Jimmy would build up his spares more so that if it goes wrong, we can fix it, right?
And also remember that, you know, this is expensive.
Exactly right.
The Division of Water Infrastructure does have water and sewer funding to cover that.
Yeah, and so passing this will help us with getting grants.
Exactly.
That's the point. My next question was, who provides assistance?
And just so you know, you all are not unique in this situation.
No.
Okay. No, we'll have to get in line with everybody else.
Okay.
I just pulled some information today. Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, they're committing $512 million over the next 10 years for water and sewer improvements, including some systems they inherited that were 50, to 100 years old, so they're implementing replacements similar to this. Southport's identified $5.7 million to address cast iron, galvanized, small diameter lines installed 1950 to 1940. Their asset management plan in that presentation noted this infrastructure was corroded and prone to breakage. Town of Carolina Beach, Mayor, I think you may have attended one of their meetings regarding that, is authorizing a $35 million bond to address water, sewer, and stormwater infrastructure needs, partially addressing aging and water and sewer infrastructure. And I had forgotten until I talked to Brian Cox today that before COVID, our firm had worked with Carolina Beach along Ocean Boulevard, North Carolina, Tennessee, in a multi-phase water and sewer replacement project that totaled nearly $19 million to replace old infrastructure that was installed around late 30s and 40s. So this is a statewide issue. And I know that looks daunting, but if you break it down in a phased approach, it becomes much more manageable over time.
So just one interesting question. For the water system improvement south of K, you talked about replacing 2-inch lines with 6-inch lines. Is that where your number came from?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
There's no requirement to do that, right?
Okay,
because those are supply lines for residential houses. We're not going to put a 6-inch line down through there.
No.
But that's how you got some of your numbers?
Correct.
Perfect, okay.
Correct.
That makes it a little better.
So, beyond the study itself, what else is eligible for grant?
It depends. There are a number of factors that go in on determining what your grant eligibility is.
Right.
It's based on your user rate, your operating ratio, your unemployment, the county unemployment. There are a variety of
factors. There's some socioeconomic.
We're going to have problems for grants.
Yes. And those,
we're going to have problems. I mean, we always do.
We always do.
And
yes.
That's sort of fair, right?
There are communities.
That's right.
Say in the more rural counties that are much more less socioeconomically advantaged, that will qualify for 100% because they are small towns where their combined water and sewer rate is above $140 because they're losing population, they don't generate the revenue, and these are systems that are beginning to be looked at really hard by the state of, do you really need to be in the water and sewer business? You may long term, you may need to turn over to either a third party or to a county because they're not growing and they're not generating enough revenue to maintain their system. And a lot of them have numbers like this that no amount of how high you raise your rates, you'll never solve the problem. So that's, they're heavily dependent on grants, don't you?
Question, are there any short-term risks that may push us to expedite this whole plan that are major?
I don't get the sense that, like some of our small towns, you've got a public works department that constantly chasing down, repairing leaks.
Yes. Okay.
No, I don't think there are any looming crises on the horizon.
All right, but, thank you.
This is more to let you all know what you have, what your challenges are, and now you can start thinking about how do we address this.
Okay, thanks.
I have a question. Yeah. With the older system and its word reuse, does that affect the pressure of the resident?
Only if there's a line break and the system loses pressure because a major main breaks. Howard has been overlooking one of our construction projects in Anson County where the county supplies all the municipalities and major 24-inch line in Wadesboro failed. And they were without, the entire county and all the municipalities were without water for a week, and they're still under a no-foil. So you're nowhere near that level.
Seems like my pressure increased a little bit.
Okay, let's get back to what we're what we're doing tonight. So, I do agree that let David and Jimmy work on this. We'll come back next month. We need to adopt this
at some point.
At some point, and next month. Arlen, I think you have to adopt before you can close out the grant. Correct.
Yeah, it takes some work on Mark's part. We also, since this is American Rescue Plan money, we have a shorter time period. I know it's still to the end of the calendar year, but we definitely have to close this out as soon as possible.
So, like with the sewer study, we need to give you the feedback 2 weeks before the meeting in August, correct? So you can change it. We'll do it the same way we did the sewer study, right?
Same as last time.
And so, we went through and we specifically targeted the sections that changed basically what the town agrees to plan, and they changed it with no problems for the sewer study. And so if we can get it to, later in the meeting, I'm gonna ask to move the August meeting for, I'll be out of town reasons. But if you get it 2 weeks before whenever the August meeting is,
And
Jimmy and I can meet that. Is that work, Arlen?
Yeah.
If we do it in the next meeting, the August meeting?
I'll be gone at that. After that point in time. So, we'll have to make arrangements for how it's going to get closed out.
Okay.
Somebody with access to the systems and the authority.
Your replacement, I hope, right?
Hopefully.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a quick question. The 2-inch GI service lines that we would have to replace are behind the homes in the rear. Is it easier to do it in the front? Do you have to keep it behind them?
The only challenge if you do it in the front, because those lines are plumbed to go out the rear.
Yeah.
So then it becomes you have to plumb it through the front, and that's a cost I can't even.
Yeah, the homeowners would have to pay a plumber to reconnect to the new meter.
Yeah.
And they would have to change their entry point in all their houses.
So that'd be more expensive.
We'll
figure out what the best way to do it.
Let's discuss that at a later time, but you're absolutely correct.
It's the engineering by block, for sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. I was just curious.
It's not the most, the best situation for
us. You don't have to go behind home. Yes.
Well, it is, because you don't have to tear the roads up to fix it. So there's some positives, the reason it was done the way it was done. The issue is moving forward, the engineering study has to decide what's the best way to do forward. But all our citizens would have to pay plumbers to reconnect their water meters if you move it out of the back.
Which
every household.
The best option is to leave it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So we're going to work on this. You have anything else for us?
Yeah, just quickly, water and sewer funding cycles are April and September every year. Any other questions?
No.
Good job. Thank you for getting it to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you find that pot at the end of the rainbow, give us a phone call.
Nice.
It is a daunting a number. So
we'll get it done.
Yeah, we'll get it done.
Yeah.
So.
And
all
spread
right.
it out.
Next item on the agenda is the committee business, Mo, Bike Ped Advisory.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, Council, staff. I have a little good news and bad news from the Bike Ped Committee. The good news is that North Carolina's electric-assisted bicycle legislation has been adopted, having statewide definitions for electric-assisted bicycles is an important step toward giving drivers, retailers, and law enforcement greater clarity. The challenge news is that the law still doesn't fully address what many communities are experiencing. Much of the public concern isn't about legal class 1, 2, and 3 electric-assisted bicycles. It's about higher-speed modified devices, electric mopeds, and electric motorcycles that are often mistaken for e-bikes. We hope the legislation continues to evolve so enforceable targets unsafe behavior in those higher-powered vehicles while protecting responsible electric-assisted bicycle riders. The statute also gives municipalities the authority to regulate the use of electric-assisted bicycles on multi-use paths and sidewalks. Since Curry Beach does not have any multi-use paths and bicycles are already prohibited on sidewalks, this provision doesn't result in any changes for our town. But now for the good news. Class 3 electric-assisted bicycles. The new law requires anyone under the age of 18 who is operating or riding on one to wear a helmet that meets safety, federal safety standards. It also allows municipalities to require helmets for riders under 18 on Class 1 and Class 2 electric-assisted bicycles. Next. Our committee has been participating at neighborhood nights where we provide free bicycle helmet fittings, as you can see, and educate families about bicycle and pedestrian safety. These events are a great opportunity to build a culture of safety through education rather than enforcement alone. A quick reminder about proper helmet fit. The helmet should sit 2 fingers above the eyebrows, form a V around the ear, and then 2 fingers between the chin strap and the chin. And a helmet that's not buckled provides little protection. Kids may think it's cool not to buckle their helmet, but it's much cooler not to have a smashed head. Helmet fitting instructions are available on the table by the door if anybody would like to take one and share. We're also busy preparing for the Tour de Island, which continues to grow as a fun, family-friendly event that encourages people to experience our island by bicycle while promoting safe riding. Special thank you to Nikki, Sean, and Commissioner Dirks for helping making this year's event better than ever. Finally, preparations continue for the Bike Walk NC Summit this September in Carolina Beach. We're excited to welcome transportation professionals, advocates, planners, engineers, law enforcement, and community leaders from across North Carolina to Pleasure Island to share ideas and best practices for creating safer places to bike, walk, and roll. And I think you will see that there is an ask for sponsorship from Bike Walk NC for the town, from the town of Curry Beach.
Yes, and that sponsorship package was not, we didn't bring this to council before we started paying for the levels of sponsorship. Beth, can you tell me, I hate to put you on the spot, but we discussed how many we've already paid.
Yeah, we've already paid for 9 registrations, but we were looking at doing the Touring Leather Uphole sponsorship, which is $2,500 this year, which includes 4. And I think, Mo, you spoke to them and they were going to
absolutely
take some of the registrations off, right?
Yes. Yeah, they'll credit us with
reduce the rate.
So our ask tonight is that the town of Curry Beach sponsor at the touring level with the credit for the additional sponsorships, registration be given towards the sponsorship, correct?
It'd be for $2,500, but they're going to credit us the 4 registrations.
4 registrations.
Is this come out of the bike ped budget that we've already approved?
Typically it does.
Pardon me?
This will come out of your budget.
We've never had a budget for sponsorship
No, but we pay the registration out of their sponsorship.
So. And the good news is this year, we usually pay for a hotel because we've attended all over the state. This year we'll have no hotel.
So we should have, they should have the money within their budget to cover this cost.
Is that hotel budget from previous, come out of your budget or out of, or as a separate?
We put it in our budget.
Yeah, it comes out of their budget.
So that's in your budget, but yet we're not going to spend it this year.
Pardon me?
The hotel assumption was just a rollover that went into the current year budget that we won't actually incur.
Right.
Okay. All right. So we got a cushion.
Yeah, we do have a little cushion.
It's not really a rollover from the prior year.
No, it's not considered a rollover.
I didn't mean rollover.
July 1 started a new budget. Yeah. So whatever's most submitted for a budget, that's the amount. I think it was a total of $10,000.
I just meant the assumption rolled over.
Yeah, and you did the budget. We didn't know where it was going to be.
Normally it's right. $2,000, and that covers hotels and that covers registrations and.
Yeah, that's roughly what you
said.
I guess the question is typically that's in your budget,
right?
And you pay for that out of your budget. And this ask is, we're not going to need that $2,000 in our budget, but we need an additional $2,500 out of the council. $2,300 out of the council to stir this so that it is truly additional dollars.
So, well,
what's in the IPED's balance at present? How much is needed budget?
The budget's $10,000, Jim.
So typically, I would think they could.
They can fluctuate.
What they spend during the course of
they spend
year.
What they want to during the course of the year. I think because this budget, this conference is here on the island.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that we help sponsor it, and that we become, that we are part of it.
Yeah.
Caroline Beach has already signed on as a sponsor. Did we determine what level?
Yes, they were doing the touring.
They're doing the touring level also.
Yeah. Now, I'm supportive of it. It just seems like we should be able to have it covered with your $10,000.
Correct.
Budget.
We should. Yes.
I think so.
Okay. Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
So, I'll entertain a motion.
Make a motion we approve the sponsorship level of touring level out of the existing budget for the Bike Ped Committee.
Yeah. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Mo. Oh, and you got something else? Excuse
just
me.
Just the last thing. We're also looking for a new BikePed committee member. If you're passionate about making Curry Beach safer and more walkable and bike friendly, we encourage you to submit an application. And as always, thank you to town staff, our volunteers, and community partners for helping make these efforts possible. Any questions?
Thank you. No. Thank you, Mo.
Yeah,
thank you.
All right, next up is the Community Center Committee. Any comment? Historic Preservation. Don't have anything from them.
Yeah, actually we do. Historic Preservation.
Yes.
Mayor, Council. The first of this month, we did have an application for the COA. For the property of 126 North 3rd, so that's next to the community center. So it was for a proposed renovation and change of use of a residential garage to an assembly mercantile wine and cheese shop tasting room per B1 district permitted uses. This will be known as Curie Beach Wine and Cheese, and it was approved. Any questions?
And again, just a reminder, from an HPC standpoint, this was really just, had nothing to do with the purpose. It was strictly just the view.
Yeah,
the view.
Yeah, yeah. And that stuff, it did not have to come to us for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That he's dealing with his zoning stuff separately.
Okay.
Great. So, Bethany, will that eventually come to council, or it'll just go through P&Z, or?
It will not. It'll be a building permit.
Okay.
It doesn't go through council because it is in the B1 district.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Cool.
Great.
And afterwards, if anybody wants to see, I've got a couple of renderings and some AI stuff also.
It's been a long time in the works trying to get this.
Very long time.
Yeah.
Since COVID.
Yeah. Marketing committee. Any report?
They're meeting next Tuesday.
Okay.
Okay.
Planning and zoning.
We did not meet.
You did not meet. Gotcha. Shoreline Beach. shoreline access and beach protection?
No report.
Okay. Stormwater committee?
No update at this point.
Oh, there's Bob. Hey, Bob. Okay. Sounds good. Next, department head business, administration.
No updates.
Development and compliance. Bethany has a couple things, I think.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Just wanted to formally introduce our new code enforcement officer, Brittany Evans. Most of you probably know her from her service on the Planning and Zoning Commission and also the Historic Preservation Commission. But she also has a pretty extensive education background. She's got a master's in teaching and a bachelor's degree in geography, which has work in GIS and also cartography, which has already come in handy in the first 2 weeks she's been here. She has worked for the USDA and most recently with the North Carolina Aquarium. And I just feel very lucky to have her on my team, and she's already been a great asset to the town just in the first 2 weeks. So with that, we'd like to administer her oath of office.
And she is a Curry Beach resident.
Yes, nice. She's a Curry Beach resident. So let's
mm-hmm. Great.
Okay, repeat after me. Hi, state your name. Do you solemnly swear that I will support?
I, Brittany Evans, do solemnly swear that I will support.
Maintain and defend the Constitution.
Maintain and defend the Constitution.
And laws of the United States.
And laws of the United States.
And the Constitution and laws of North Carolina.
And the Constitution and laws of North Carolina.
Not inconsistent therewith.
Not inconsistent therewith.
And that I will faithfully execute the duties of my office.
And that I will faithfully execute the duties of my office.
As the code enforcement officer for the town of Curie.
As the code enforcement officer for the town of Curie.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
And that's all.
That's all? Yeah? Great. Finance, Arlen, anything?
No updates.
Fire department chief?
No updates, sir.
Chief Bailey, anything?
No updates.
Public Works, Jimmy, anything?
No updates, sir.
Nikki, Recreation, you've got some updates. Made the news today and everything. Boy, they.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. We're back again this month with the film permit application. We've already approved some of the preliminary prep work, but this is the full ask for the rest of the filming and closeout work that they'll be doing here in town. And just as an update, we did get the signatures page where they spoke with all the downtown businesses. We have the camel permit, and there's a lot as well. So I'm going to open it up to questions from you guys based on what was in the agenda packet.
Yes, so Fort Fisher Boulevard, August 5th, intermittent traffic control. Do you know how much that's going to be? You're turning on and off the main road through town?
Sorry, it'll be about 3 hours of work on Fort Fisher at most.
And is that intermittent, what does that mean? You're 10 minutes at a time, or?
Every 3 minutes is typically what we do, okay. Unless you guys want to give us more. But 3 minutes is typical.
Okay. And do you post signs so people go down 3rd or 4th Avenue?
We can, if you would like. We can do a
yes.
Detour, yeah.
I think our citizens would like that,
a
yes.
Detour.
Especially yes. Yeah. Please work with the police department, but I think you'll get lit up if we don't.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Okay.
We do have the approval of NCDOT as well, as long as we get the approval from you guys.
Okay. And that's just on the 5th?
That is, it'll be Wednesday morning.
Wednesday the 5th, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That's the only question I have.
Okay.
As far as the businesses go, I mean, everybody's unanimously on board.
Everybody's on board. We spoke with everybody, let them know. We are not doing the closure on K Avenue anymore, which would have affected them the most, so that's not happening.
Okay.
So really, they're just welcoming us, and we're all trying to support them as well.
Good deal.
Okay.
I don't have any questions.
Any other questions?
Anybody? Yes, sir.
Okay. You need a motion from us?
Yes, sir.
Make a motion to approve the requested saltwater filming permit.
Second.
All right. Have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Mm-mm. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Good luck.
Good luck. Yeah.
Glad you're here.
Excited.
And that baby will pull off.
Yeah, right.
That's all for recreation tonight.
Okay. Thank you, Nick. All right, under old business, continued discussion of the 30th anniversary of Hurricane Fran. Mayor Pro Tem?
Yeah, so Nikki and I are working. We've got lots of pictures from a number of citizens. Tom Russell gave us the most. I think we're going to do it in two phases because I've been talking with Commissioner Dirks as well. So for this September, our goal is to work and make a smaller video just like we did for the 75th anniversary that Jim Dugan actually overdubbed. And so we'll do that in-house with the Recreation Department. We'll have that ready before that weekend, and then we'll just communicate to our citizens, hey, it's the 30-year anniversary. Please go out at your convenience and do this. Because it's Labor Day weekend, I don't really want to get involved in a big in-person thing, personally, because it's Labor Day weekend. And then longer term, Commissioner Dirks has talked to some people about potentially doing some type of documentary on Hurricane Fran in Curie Beach, and we'll see where that goes as we work forward. But I think this could be a good lead into that. So
I have a couple updates.
Okay, then there you go. There's some more.
I've talked to a bunch of different people about this, and the most promising right now is I talked with Cindy Meyer about, because at some point there might be funding involved required of this, so I've already kind of expressed that to her. But she, it's interesting how this happened. She suggested that I talk to UNC Wilmington, see if they have any students that may be interested in helping with this. In the meantime, I've talked to like five different filmmakers in Wilmington. You know, and if you think about it, there's a really nice story to tell here, even though it was devastating, about our community, about the perseverance, about the teamwork. What this community is about. You know, I know when we experienced all the problems at our house, I was taken back by the love that is in this community. And I think we can come back, I think a documentary on this, especially with some of the people that lived through it and were here and experienced it, both the devastation and the teamwork, I think it tells a great story about our town. We have filmmakers that are in Wilmington, so it just kind of in my head just started exploding. So I talked to like four or five. Pricing is ranging all over the place, but I kind of honed in on one guy who is known for documentaries. And then out of the blue, I got introduced to this lady named Laura Dunn at UNC Wilmington. She is the head of their documentary department. She has a group that is looking for a fall project, and she's interested in talking with us and having them do that as part of their project.
Right.
So trying to tie all the pieces together, but I think there's a really cool opportunity here to have a really nice story about our town, especially after I've listened to David talk multiple times in the hurricane prep sessions. It's fascinating too. So more to come.
Great. I think it sounds promising. Thank you.
So once Recreation and I have something, we'll send it to council for you guys to review before we post it anywhere. So we'll be working on that the last of July and August.
Great. Okay. Anything else? Any further?
No, sir.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. 9.2, update on the boardwalk project. Commissioner Ashbury?
Yeah, just very quick. Project was completed end of June. Went one extra day, so rather than three, it went into a fourth day. There were a little bit of surprise along the way where the original intent was to dig out about half of that area with just having natural flow underneath and then piping with a drainage system for where there was clearly not going to be the opportunity to have water flow underneath the boardwalk. Well, as they got into it, they realized there was a lot more fill than they had anticipated. So the only area that actually has free flow without the drainage system is the very north section, probably only about 20 yards. The rest of it, all the way going north, has the underground drainage system. And so basically the intent there is to just have water flow into the drainage pipe, and then there's outflows underneath the boardwalk periodically to allow that water to drain out into the dune. We haven't had much rain, obviously, but when we have had rain, the amount of water accumulation dissipates very quickly. So it does seem like it's working. The only semi-disappointment we had was that we had intended to have all of the river rock be very large. There are some smaller pieces that, at least initially, was causing, as people walked on it, cars drove on it, whatever, to have a little bit of those pieces come back onto Atlantic. But as we continue to push, and I think just over time, the smaller pieces will dig in and we won't have that issue as much. But the feedback we've gotten so far, at least that I've heard, has been positive. I think it looks a lot better. Mm-hmm. And now Jimmy's got the challenge of, you know, doing all the remaining ongoing maintenance that's needed, you know, from a standpoint of surface material to keep the boardwalk safe and attractive.
Thanks, Joe.
And Jimmy, I think it'd be wise that in those areas when we couldn't dig out some of that fill underneath it, when you have sections taken out, if we can dig that out, that would be helpful, I think.
Looks good though. It's nice.
Yeah, I think it looks nice.
Okay. They did a good job for sure.
Yeah, and you know, and he got when I talked with the contractor that first day, he realized that removing that material, the vegetation, was just going to take longer.
Yeah, no, they did good work.
And I'm much rather, and it really worked out better because he didn't haul the rock in until Monday and put it all out.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right, great. 9.3, continued discussion of pickleball court noise. Commissioner Dirks.
All right. So I wrote this up. So bear with me, okay, please.
So you're going to give the copy to Mandy so you put it in the minutes,
yes,
right?
Yes, I will do that. So I appreciate there's been some persistence on from some citizens about bringing a complaint about the noise from the pickleball courts. I brought a lot of information back last time. Thankfully, we tabled it so that we could talk more. And I wanted to reiterate some of the information that I provided last time. And then I have some recommendations that I would hope that we could discuss maybe approving by the board, by the council here. First of all, I play pickleball all the time, 3 or 4 times a week until I tore my Achilles. So I won't be able to play till next year. But in Curry Beach, Carolina Beach, Wilmington, Leland, I play a lot. So I've got a lot of information about what's going on with these courts. But I've spent a lot of time thinking about this. And one of the things I always want to do is I want to look at things factually. I want to look at things fairly. I want to put myself in the same position. I want to find a win-win. And after thinking through all this and getting to some recommendations, I just want to remind everybody, this is an active town. Whether it's the citizens or visitors, you know, people seek the outdoors in this town in many ways. We have especially an active senior community that desires to be active and have a variety of in a variety of ways for health and fitness reasons. And you know, seniors are encouraged to be active, and we want to support that. Noise is a byproduct of the activity, especially in this town. Therefore, it should be expected to some degree. But within reason, noises are all around us in this town. There's garbage trucks, there's children playing in the streets, there's music playing, hammering on roofs and construction sites, there's sirens blaring from fire trucks and police cars, military flying overhead, people talking on their walks and bikes, barking dogs on, I mean, there is noise in this town. And so I like to call it, you know, the sounds of recreation, the sounds of tourism. That's part of our town. Pickleball is the fastest growing sport. It has grown from 42 million players to 24.3 million players in the U.S. And it's going to keep growing. So it's enjoyed by hundreds of people around here. So I really took this seriously, trying to think of both sides of the fence. Pickleball decibel level is less than people talking, basketball, children on a playground, gas lawnmowers, garbage trucks, vacuum cleaners, decibel wise. But it does carry that high frequency monotony of sound, which I can understand can be annoying to people. So when I looked at this, there's really four potential ways to mitigate noise with pickleball courts, our pickleball courts. We can shut them down. We can require or request that different equipment be used, like soft paddles or less noisy paddles or balls. We can construct or apply noise-resistant materials and barriers like walls or shrubs, or we could reduce court usage by limiting availability. To me, those are the only four things we can do to address the noise issue. If I put my citizen hat on now, at my house I hear noise, all of that stuff I just said. I wake up in the morning between 6 and 7 and the garbage truck is emptying garbage outside our windows. People are laughing, I hear this, all the noise all the time. And it's just a lot of hustle and bustle in this town. And so personally, I can't and I won't try to stop any of that. Which means basically I have three options. I can either accept it, I can make my home more noise resistant, or I can move. To me, those are the three options I have with given the noise situation around my house. So if I put my commissioner hat back on and focus on the fact there isn't a specific town ordinance to govern this. We have one that's close that says noises at night near residences. The operation of any place of business, restaurant, filling station, store, office, including private residences, between the hours of 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. in such manner as to create loud noises, loud and disturbing noises of such frequency or volume as to annoy or disturb any citizen, and particularly the creating of disturbing noises of such frequency and volumes as to annoy or disturb the quiet comfort, peace, or repose of any person in any dwelling, tourist lodging, or any other type of residence. So we have something, but it doesn't say pickleball court, it doesn't say Joe Eats Park, but it kind of leans into that. We've had little to no complaints about this. In fact, we've really only had one, but it has been persistent, and I feel like it's our job to address it. The pickleball community is very large on the island, and I believe the KB Pickleball Group has about 150 to 200. The numbers will continue to grow, and therefore a change would be impactful to many people, hundreds of people, versus the one person with the complaint. Joe Eats Park is used by our citizens, residents, CB residents, our visitors from all over come here, they play pickleball. In fact, a lot of them seek it out when they're looking for a place to go. So we've got to keep that in mind. The last thing is pickleball, like any other sport, has specifically defined equipment with respect to paddles, balls, nets, etc., that are approved by the USAPA. Consequently, players have invested a lot of money in their equipment. I mean, we wouldn't go ask tennis players to change their rackets just to play here. And a lot of them have multiple paddles that they've invested hundreds of dollars in, and they play all over. So to play here with a certain paddle and then go somewhere else is not a solution. And so, so when it comes down to it, noise is part of our active community. Pickleball is important and valuable to our citizens and visitors. Players are not going to invest in new paddles. And the demand for the value of pickleball far outweighs the complaints, in my opinion. If it were widespread complaints, it might be a different matter, but it's not widespread. So the knee-jerk reaction would be maybe to put a sign at the park asking players to use soft paddles. It won't work. It'll drive the wrong outcomes. We'll get tainted. People will say you can't go play in Curry Beach because they won't let you use paddles that you want to use. That's not the option, and people will ignore it anyway. Shutting down the pickleball courts, it's not an option either. We can't do that to our citizens here and just shut down the courts that a lot of people use from all over. And tourists that may come here thinking they're going to play can't use it. Installing and applying noise-resistant barriers and shrubbery to what we have now is way costly, and it's short-term given the longer-term goals of Joe Eats Park. So I would not advocate trying to do anything short-term. So here's my suggestion. This is what I'd like for us to consider. I think we should restrict play or establish quiet hours. I think that's a good give. You know, the ordinance we have now is from 11 p.m. until 7 a.m. I'd even say 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. Establish quiet hours, no pickleball allowed after 9 p.m. I mean, nobody's out. I mean, I can tell you, playing pickleball, there's very few people out there after 9 p.m. anyway. To me, that's a give. towards the noise resolution. I would like for the town to buy this. There's a ball called a DigiPro ball that is a soft noise, and let our KB group play with it and let them bring feedback to us. Maybe some of the players that just play there will be conscientious and they'll do it, just they'll use those balls to be quiet. But I think it's worth us at least experimenting with that and see how they like it. It's not an expense, I don't have the expense with me, but it's not expensive, but it would be good to get feedback from them. Then we're being proactive. Those are the short-term solutions. The long-term solutions, we just gotta keep pushing for the Joe Weeks Park renovation. Continue to work towards the Joe Weeks Park renovation where the pickleball courts will be relocated. And noise reduction has already been integrated into the plans, similar to Carolina Beach at Chapel. This is yet another reason to expedite getting approval from MATSU and moving forward with the next steps. I mean, that is still being proactive towards solving the noise problem. It's just it may be later than sooner. And then the last thing is, once the park's in place, I think the town should monitor the noise. We should say, look, we're going to monitor. I mean, everywhere I've read, all the research I've done, is there's a certain decibel level you can measure to. And just show the town that we are concerned and we are measuring the decibels of the sound coming out of the park to the neighboring towns. I don't think that would be difficult to do, and it would again show that we are in tune with the noise issue, so it doesn't go to other people and we don't get other complaints. So in summary, I would recommend that we create quiet hours at Joe Weeks Park for pickleball from 9 p.m. until 7 a.m. daily. I would recommend that the town or Nikki maybe could help, or somebody could help get a bucket of balls, of these DigiPro balls, and let them bring some feedback to us short term. And then the others are just long term. We continue to push and get Joe Weeks Park on the plate sometime before I leave in 4 years.
You're not leaving.
No. Okay. All right. Dave,
can I ask a couple of questions?
Yes, sir.
Do we have park rules, rather than, I'm not opposed to changing the hours, but rather than investing in changing the...
We've already changed the park hours to address this.
And how do the lights work? Can we stop the lights at the beginning of the quiet?
Nikki, we close the park at 9 o'clock.
The park hours are sunrise to sunset, and the lighted courts are till 10 p.m., and the courts are up, or the lights are on the timer, so they can't be turned on after 10 p.m.
We got the lighting's on a timer.
We could change the timer.
Which is no problem.
Yeah, current hours are sunrise to 10 p.m.
Sunrise to 10 p.m.
So 10 p.m. is fine with me, but I think that's one of the things we need to talk about is make sure everybody understands there are quiet hours established for pickleball from 10 until 7. You know, there are players at Carolina Beach that play at 5:30 in the morning, and that's something we don't want here. We would rather, I think we should make it to 7 p.m. is the earliest you can start.
7 a.m.
Okay, that would take us changing our park rules, mm-hmm. and doing that.
Is there anybody planned? Do we know? I don't know.
I mean, people go out early. The only complaints we've received are evening hours from one household.
Right.
And this is just specific to pickleball is the mm-hmm. request, right? Not yeah. the park itself.
I mean, we could just lean into what we have and accentuate it and just make sure they understand that there is quiet time already established there. But for the most part, I don't know anybody who plays before 7 up here at KB. I think it's reasonable in the mornings to expect some quiet up until 7 a.m. That would be my recommendation, 7 to 9 or 7 to 10. We could leave it still at 10.
But 7 to 10 are our current park hours, correct?
Sunrise to 10,
excuse me.
Whatever time that is.
Yeah. Yeah. Different every day.
Yeah.
So that's what I recommend.
It was 5.
We'll see how they react, but I would not shut down the courts. I would not put any signs up. I would play pickleball the way it's meant to be played.
I tend to agree with you to stay with those hours, and just to let you know that we did meet with the person that had voiced, you know, their concern about the pickleball noise, and I did offer I said, you know, whenever, you know, you're there and this, you hear the noise, call me. I'm a couple minutes away. I'll come down and I'll listen to it. I have yet to hear one thing from that person. So...
So no decision is another...
So I would not put a... I mean, he's not reached out to have me come and listen to this noise that he says that he hears. So
yeah, and Mark, I don't think it was a knee-jerk reaction.
I don't think I would
overreact
because he hasn't come back to me.
I don't think it was a knee-jerk reaction to volunteer to put a sign up. Yeah. This is what the citizen requested that he would be satisfied with if people would just make an attempt to use quiet paddles and quiet balls. It wasn't going to require, because I made it very clear that we weren't, I was not in favor of recommending anything that caused more enforcement issues
right.
on the town. But I'm fine with, if we want to try to restrict the hours, change the park hours to make it a hard 7 a.m. To 10 p.m., that kind of makes
it. He said sunrise this morning was 6:15, so it's 45 minutes. I don't know that we need to change it at all. The 9 p.m. side, I'm fine with either way, right? Especially if no one's even playing.
9 or 10.
I'm fine with both of them, honestly.
Okay. I'm fine with both of them.
Me too.
The sunrise is 6:15.
I mean, I think the issue is...
It's light outside a half hour before that.
Say again?
It's light outside a half hour before
that. Yeah, no, but our rules are sunrise.
Yeah, and it's just going to be like...
If people start really early, you can go say it's not sunrise yet. I agree with you.
Yeah. I think it's
dawn is early, for sure, but sunrise is... By your phone, you can see what time it is.
One of the solutions is for us to just go back and say, look, we have quiet hours between 10 and sunrise
right.
every day. So there is a big chunk of time that is quiet.
And
we are working hard to move to Joe Weeks Park, the renovation, which will address most of this issue, we hope.
But I'm open to whatever council wants to do.
I would entertain a motion.
I kind of like the 7 a.m. only because we have another noise ordinance, and it is 7 a.m. to, you know, it starts
11
p.m. I kind of like having a set number as opposed to like, well, it was sunrise, you know. I kind of like having a 7 a.m.
I don't have a problem with that either. So,
if someone calls to enforce that, Chief, is that your guys that go say it's too early? Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have any concern either way? You don't care, right?
So
just tell us the rules.
We never receive any calls about people.
Can move the deaf people.
Nice. There.
We
don't move people.
We would just need to make sure we have a sign.
So the people who heard of hearing, we will move them closer.
So make a motion, right?
So not.
Yeah, I'm waiting on the motion.
Are they in
15? Then I guess we need to
amend it and bring it back.
Yeah, I guess so. I'd recommend 7 to 9, hard times.
There
you go. Yeah, I like hard times too.
Okay.
So and you might be able to just amend, well, you can amend it if you're going to use 11 p.m., but you could amend, just add Joey's Park into that code that we already
have. Well, we have our park rules in the code.
It's in there.
Yeah.
All right.
So make the motion.
No, we can't make a motion until we change the code.
Yeah, so it's going to be a motion to direct the town attorney to amend the code and bring it back to the next council meeting.
Okay.
With hours you want.
Well, I make a motion that the town attorney modify the code for the park to be from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. is quiet time.
And we're
going to
go to 11?
No,
I thought we were going to say
9 p.m. to 7 a.m. is the right time.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Yeah.
I'll second that, sir.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Do we have any further discussion?
Yeah.
Jim, are you clear? You
need 7 to 9.
Nikki's got a point.
Yeah.
Nikki.
So that's going to apply to all the lighted courts, university.
Yes.
Because it is worded separately in the code. I'm reading it.
So the hours are sunrise to sunset, and then the window lights open until 10.
Just so I'm clear, we're going to create a 7 to 9 quiet time for everything related to the park.
Yes.
9 to 7. 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. is quiet time.
Not just pickleball or basketball.
Be everything. Park
shuts down when the lights go off.
At Joey's Park.
Correct.
Okay. Got it.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion?
No, sir.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Great. All right, now.
Can I ask one more thing?
Yes, sir.
About those balls, do you want to... Need to just work with Nikki about trying to get some balls and get some people.
Yeah, we need to see what the cost
let's
is.
Let's see what the cost is before we commit to that.
Yeah, let's see the cost before we commit.
I heard they're expensive.
Digi Pros are?
Expensive.
Well, that's too much.
Yeah.
I'll come and talk to you.
Okay.
I heard they're expensive.
Okay. next item on the agenda is new business. Discussion of proposed Wilmington Harbor deepening project. I received an email from the Orton Plantation folks asking the Corps of Engineers to make sure they followed all their the regulations and before they submitted the letter. Byron and I jumped on a phone call with the lady. One of the ladies is heading this up. She was very helpful with us, talking about the reason for this, and she had a vast knowledge of harbor deepening and operations of ports and everything. I think us signing on to the letter is really just a step in just making sure they understand how serious we take this. She did recommend that I write another letter in response to our individual concerns. And I'll go through those in just a minute. Byron, you want to add anything to what we discussed that day?
Yeah, the lady we spoke to, Barbara, just to kind of clarify what the mayor was saying, she actually managed the Charleston project, the deepening project. So, I mean, she is well entrenched in this industry. And a very, very impressive lady. I mean, every question we asked, she had an answer for. I was reluctant to just immediately sign on, thinking that this is a very affluent group that clearly was in opposition to the deepening, and they were just throwing the kitchen sink kind of at it. The reality is that there are very specific Army Corps of Engineer processes that require studies to be completed in advance prior to approval. And in this case, there are a number of those studies that have not been completed. And the request, you know, going to the major to go ahead and get approval and then get those studies done afterwards is just very contradictory to how the process is supposed to work. So that's really all that's being asked at this point, is to just make sure all the studies are done. The design is at 35%, where it's currently at 27% today. And so for that reason, I'm very supportive of signing on to the letter.
So it's just to make them comply with their own standards?
That's it.
Basically, yes.
That's it. Now, there is, I mean, behind the scenes, this is a group that is vehemently opposed to the mm-hmm. deepening. So, but at the same time, like I said, their reasons for opposing it at this point in time are very valid.
So do we know who else has signed on?
No,
I
do not know who else has signed on.
That's my only concern, right? So,
well, I can ask that. I told her I would email her tonight.
Right, and so I'm supportive, right? Every government agency should follow their own rules, right? So I'm very supportive from that perspective. My only issue is if we're the only one that's signing on, I'm concerned about that, because both MOTSU and the Corps of Engineers are critical to us for a number of different reasons. And I think MOTSU wants this. I don't know that the shipping companies really impact Curie Beach, but both MOTSU and the Corps of Engineers do our beach renourishment, and then they own the property where we have our park, where we have public works infrastructure, where we have our lagoon. And so if we're popping our head up and the only people, that's my only concern, right? And I don't know that we know the answer, but I would like to know that other towns are doing the same thing, right?
I mean, she did, like Southport, for example, is
right.
signing. I mean, so there, but that's, they're kind of right there in that same
right,
area.
Right, exactly
so
right.
That,
yeah, yeah.
Brunswick County, there's a lot of support.
There's a lot of support.
It.
I did talk to Caroline Beach Mayor today, and Caroline Beach just hadn't gotten involved in the Harvard deepening. They didn't see, they said from their staff perspective, they don't see it, feel that there's a danger to the water supply.
Wow,
so,
okay.
So they weren't even asked to sign on to this.
Well, they haven't been involved. The reason we were asked to sign on is because we signed a letter that Southport had originally instigated to, saying, please be, please follow all your...
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I've made it very clear. I mean, I've attended every single meeting that the Corps of Engineers has had, every public meeting, every individual small segments, even though some of them didn't apply to us, I made sure I attended all those meetings. This has been going on for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. And what this doesn't change is our concerns, and I'll go through those concerns here in just a minute, that we have about our water supply. Because it's all based on our water supply.
Correct.
We've made it very clear that we're supportive of the port and the mission and the importance to our economy. The thing that we have to do, we don't feel like the report accurately reflects the long-term impact on our Castlehaine aquifer that will occur when the channel's deepened. Their studies say no, but I want them to make sure they're following all the procedures. Second, if PSTAF sedimentation intrusion into our drinking water supply is a matter of time, and eventually, sometime, we're going to have to deal with that. We don't want that to speed that process up. Three, saltwater intrusion through groundwater contamination, the additional weight that the larger ships we use will potentially cause more wave action and more saltwater intrusion through groundwater contamination. And then the lack of an adequate mitigation planning and funding if such occurrences occur. The mitigation plan for this project is basically nothing compared to what they've done in other communities. And that's just a fund that they have to agree to put up in case we do have problems down the road and we find these concerns do come into play. They may not, but I think we have to go on the record by stating that these are our concerns, and this is the reason we want you to complete the report before you send it on the letter on to the Corps of Engineers office.
No, I agree with you. I'm supportive.
I support it, too.
And I agree with all your concerns. That's where we are, so.
I mean, yeah.
So what do you need from us? Do you need a consensus, Beth, for the mayor to sign this and then send a separate letter?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Then I make a motion we approve the mayor, authorize the mayor to forward this with Curie Beach's name on it.
As well as to create the supplementary.
Correct.
Yeah. Create the second letter. Okay.
A second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
No, sir.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Motion passes. And I will send you all a copy of this letter once I get it completed and everything. Mayor updates real quick. Coffee with the mayor is Saturday, 9 to 11 here. Scott, I expect you to be there. You've missed me the last couple of times. Scott and Debbie always here. Don't want anybody to fall out, but Connie and I do have a meeting with Matsu this week. We have one scheduled to discuss the Joe Eads Park plan and other items within the town. They are bringing their person that handles all the leases and all that good thing.
Good
so,
luck.
So, yeah, and
that's
I'm looking.
Big.
It's a big step. So, all right, any other commissioner items? Mark?
No, sir.
David, anything?
Request to look at your calendars to reschedule the August meeting. So I'll be out of town the 17th, which would be the regular schedule. And I request the following Monday, I'm trying to get my calendar up. The 24th.
The 24th?
Wait. Does staff have any issues on the 24th?
I'm good.
I heard the attorney say something.
Dim?
It rings a bell. There's nothing in my calendar, but it does raise a red flag. I'm trying to remember why. Okay. I think I'm okay for meeting that evening.
Okay. So I make a motion to reschedule the August meeting from 6 p.m. on the 17th to 6 p.m. on the
24th.
Second. We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed.
Thank you. And then also I'd like to thank the mayor and the two chiefs that sneakily put me in and then made me have to go drive and pick up at the battleship Jim Dugan's award and Tom Russell's award, even though there was another one somewhere circling around. So nice job. Thank you, all three. Most appreciated. That's all I have.
All right. Connie, anything?
No, I don't have anything.
Byron, anything?
No, sir.
Okay.
I do have one.
Okay.
Keep Joe Barlock's family in your prayers.
Right. I meant to mention that. In case y'all don't know, Joe's father passed away. I think he was 96 years old.
Wow.
Recently passed. And Joe and his family have gone through a lot of loss in the past couple of years, so keep them in prayer. Entertain a motion to go into closed session for attorney privilege and for personnel matter.
Make a motion to go into closed session for attorney-client privilege and personnel matter per the appropriate North Carolina General statutes.
All right. Second. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye.